Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 100 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Brianna Lafferty about her near-death experience. Brianna is a certified death and spiritual doula and hypnotist. Her first book, White Flame, won the 2023 Bronze COVR Visionary Award. Her other books are Wired to be Dysfunctional and Leads to Nowhere. Hi, Brianna. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So we're going to talk about your near-death experience and some other kind of paranormal spiritual experiences you've had. But first of all, could we start off talking about the experiences you had when you were younger and there was some kind of ghosts in your house where you were growing up?
Absolutely. That plays a huge part into my NDE down the road. As a young child, preteen, around 11 or 12-ish, I started experiencing a lot of paranormal activity in our home. First, it was ghosts. And I didn't mind them. They didn't scare me. It was kind of cool, but it's like they didn't see me or they just ignored me and I kind of just let them do their thing. And, you know, it was very cordial, not scary at all, and kind of cool, actually. They usually hovered I couldn't see the bottom of their legs or anything. Maybe floating a couple feet off the ground. And that was, you know, kind of a cool experience. It didn't really freak me out. I just didn't think much of it, honestly. But things took a much darker turn when I started seeing these things that would interact with me. And they just brought a presence of fear. And I'll explain a little bit more about what that means. I've now classified them as dark entities. And much more powerful than ghosts, and actually enjoy causing fear. One of them was what I'd call the top hat shaped shadow man. And what I didn't know is that my sister and her friends also saw this entity. And I saw this entity, and my friends from church saw this entity. My sister called him the party ghost because he loved showing up at our little parties that we'd have, usually with our friends staying the night, you know, slumber parties and stuff. And she never told me and I never told her, but we had both told our mom about this thing. And it would usually cross the walls where we'd see it, you know, in reflections of mirrors or glass. And it was really kind of scary and dark. So we didn't really like it, but we didn't know that each other were witnessing this. There was another entity that would show up as someone we knew. And I swore that I was talking to one of my friends in one of our spare bedrooms. And then I turn around and there was my friend. And so it's kind of a trickster and it liked to bring on different identities and just really mess with us. I also saw what I thought was probably an alien craft that scared the daylights out of me. I couldn't move. I was frozen in fear. And it just stayed there for what felt like hours. And we lived in a very rural community, so there was no light pollution. You know, there weren't a lot of helicopters or planes. And even if there was, the shape of it was not that of a helicopter. And it was way bigger than any plane. And of course, planes can't stay stationary in the air. That also scared me. But I think the most terrifying experience as a child was we had an ancestral doll that had been passed down generations and generations. And I'm sure it lost its eyes decades and decades ago before we even received it. And one evening or night, I went into the room where it was sitting on a little rocking chair. And its eyes were glowing red and it turned towards me. And I basically just never went in that room again. So Those were the paranormal experiences that I had as a child, and they would continue on into my early adult life, where I started astro traveling involuntarily and ending up in different dimensions with more of these dark entities.
So can I ask, first of all, about the ghosts? They weren't scary and you saw them around the house, but what were they doing? Were they just kind of passing through? Were they sitting there? And did they seem aware of you?
So the ghosts didn't really seem aware of me. I saw a few that just kind of passed through, but the most memorable one was this group of about four gentlemen playing poker and smoking cigars at a table with an old bar light. And that one was the most interesting, but they also didn't seem to notice me, or they at least didn't pay me any attention. And it was just kind of cool seeing them play cards, smoking cigars at this table that just kind of floated in my room.
When you were in these other dimensions and there were dark entities, was there anything about that experience that was similar to when you're in your NDE as regards your perception and how it felt, and like your eyesight and your hearing?
So as far as how I felt and what the dimensions were like, were not anywhere close to what I experienced in my NDE. I was formless for the most part in about 85% of these experiences. I didn't have a body. And so in that regards, that was similar to parts of my near-death experience, but it was very dark, very scary, and it was like I was being chased by these dark entities, and I was trying to run from them. And also, there was no fear or darkness, you know, this heavy, heavy feeling of darkness and evil in my NDE, where some of the dimensions I ended up astro traveling felt very dark, very dense, and very scary.
So what happened with these dark entities? Do you feel that they kind of attached to you in some way?
So we would later find out that I had been attached. We wouldn't figure that out until 3 weeks prior to my near-death experience. But these entities, it turns out, they had attached to me since I first started seeing the dark ones. And there was many attached, and it caused all sorts of havoc. Tons of horrific nightmares, insomnia, fear. And we thought that maybe once we found out I had all these attachments, that maybe that was the cause of my rare, incurable neurological movement disorder. My mom had done some research later in my life, that these dark entities that attach to people can cause really weird illnesses that the doctors don't know how to treat, and they're very rare, or, you know, just kind of odd. And my grandma even said, when I was young and starting to experience this illness, that it looked like I was fighting things off, because I would involuntarily twitch, I'd have non-epileptic seizures. So I was very aware, but I was just flailing all over the place. So we thought for a little while that that was the possible cause of this illness.
How did your ND occur? What happened to bring it on?
So going back to when I started having these paranormal experiences, it was a couple years after I started having symptoms of this neurological condition. And we realized that even though the house was full of these entities and ghosts and paranormal activities, my sister didn't get attachments because she was healthy. She slept great. She had a great spiritual life. She was very protected. Where I was, I was going through puberty, which is hard enough as a girl. I'm sure it's hard for gentlemen too. But going through puberty, we had just moved from all our friends in a city to this really rural community where I had no friends. So I was kind of depressed, and then I had insomnia with these nightmares, and started experiencing, you know, these weird twitching episodes and tremors and all sorts of stuff. And it would take me 8 years to get diagnosed from when it started at age 10 to age 18, I was misdiagnosed, undiagnosed, and just went through the ringer. But I was the perfect person to attach to because I was already depressed and feeling pain and kind of, you know, in this constant state of fear and survival, which is what they love to feed off of. And when I was finally diagnosed, we had already tried all the medications, holistic options, Eastern medicine, Chinese herbs. I mean, any alternative things we could think of, we had tried it. And when I was diagnosed, they're like, we really don't know what to do for you. It's super rare. No one in our team has seen it. There's only like one page of research about this condition. And, you know, just kind of left it at that. And it was progressive and progressing. And I had this deep sense of knowing that I was going to die before I reached the age of 28. And I relayed this to my mom, and she took me seriously. And I just tried to live the best life possible with what I was experiencing, which continued to be apparitions, astral traveling, paranormal things, dark entities. I was full of a lot of fear. I was exhausted. I still had major insomnia, which was getting worse. And, you know, just kind of trying to remain optimistic, even though my life was very, very difficult. And because of the attachments and my vulnerable state, I also attracted not so good men into my life. And, you know, that created even more stress and more pain, more, you know, just craziness. And I had bought a house at 19. I flipped it. And at the age of 24, I had sold the house and took the proceeds to move and live the rest of my life out in kind of a place I thought would be really pretty. So I moved closer to the ocean. I love the ocean. I love heat. The cold would also set me off in these non-epileptic seizures and nerve pain. So I wanted somewhere warm. And I just tried to do the best I could with, you know, what I was given and try to enjoy the rest of my life because I knew it was limited. Well, April in 2017, my mom, of course, never gave up hope, never gave up of a cure or treatment or anything to help relieve this pain I was going through. So she had come across spiritual release therapy, where people are trained to be able to release these entities that have attached to people. And that's where she told me, you know, I read that it can cause these crazy illnesses and, you know, maybe that's the solution. And none of the alternative or holistic methods I had done had brought me, you know, any pain really. I mean, sometimes the Chinese herbs tasted really awful and maybe some nausea, but I was like, okay, you know, at least I know it's probably safer than the pharmaceuticals they had me on and tried me on that caused super major side effects in me. I was always the less than 1% of people get these side effects. So I was always that less than 1%. So I agreed to it. I was, you know, not really too hopeful that it would work. I also didn't know much about our spiritual bodies or how much energy would be moved. And we were warned that you could get kind of sick as if you had the flu. And later I would find out that it's a very common thing when you do energy work that you can get very physical flu-like symptoms. In feng shui, if you move too much around your house or your office or the place you're trying to create the best energy possible, if you do too much at once, they call it the feng shui flu because you can get ill. There's a chiropractor named Dr. Joe Dispenza that realized the amazing healing capabilities our own bodies have. And if you go to a week-long retreat, they warn you that you can leave with the flu or, you know, leave with a flu-like symptom, and they call it the Dispenza influenza. Well, I didn't know any of this back then, and I'm 25 years old at this point, and my illness has progressed quite significantly. I am constantly twitching, tremoring. I had to give up a lot of my favorite hobbies because I just couldn't hold anything steady. And then I was an extreme insomniac. I could go about 3 days with zero sleep, and I still function pretty well for being sleep deprived. And I mean like zero sleep, not even 10-minute cat nap or anything. And still having horrific nightmares. So we start this spirit release therapy, and I end up coming down with flu-like symptoms. So now I'm also not being able to retain any liquid or any food. And we asked the lady to cease the therapy. And unbeknownst to us, she didn't. And the entities had been attached for about 15 years at this point, and there's tons of them because, you know, they probably just invited their friends or, you know, however you want to say that. And I got really, really sick on top of the conditions I was already facing. And I was praying with my mom towards the end of it because they were messing with my mind. And then I was like, oh, they're feeding off my fear. I'm just not going to be afraid anymore. So then they became physical. And I was like, oh my gosh, I do not know how to deal with this. So we were praying, you know, almost 24 hours a day. My parents booked a plane ticket to come see me. They knew that something was going on. And even my dad, who is pretty much the most logical guy, he ran two construction companies, and just very anti-paranormal, anti-metaphysical, just very straight-laced, who doesn't claim to dream. He said that God talked to him, which he had never talked to him before, and said I was under demonic attack. So the soonest flight they could get was still a day away. At 2 a.m, I told my mom that I was going to hang up and try to get some sleep, even though I was under such aggressive attack that I knew that I wasn't going to be able to sleep, but that she really needed to try herself because she was also exhausted. So I hung up the phone at 2 a.m. and right after that, I realized I couldn't do this anymore. My body, my mind, my heart, and I didn't know it, but even my soul had given up. And I just cried out, I give up. It's in your hands. I can't do this anymore. And I cried out with every single part of me from a soul level. And I meant it. I didn't even know who I was crying out to. I just figured if there was a God, if there was a, you know, higher intelligent design or intelligence, that, you know, it was kind of my last option because I couldn't do it anymore. Well, when I completely surrendered, everything went still. If I felt all these entities ripped off of me, all the noise in my head had just gone silent, as if you're in a screaming stadium that just instantly was silence. There was no sound. It was the most serene, peaceful thing I'd ever experienced in my life. And there was no pain. There was no fear. There was the absence of any of those lower frequency emotions and feelings. And then I heard this big booming voice. Are you ready? Well, something answered my cry for help. I didn't hesitate to say yes. And that's when I felt hard pounds on my chest, and my heart stopped. And that is what led to my near-death experience.
When you had the near-death experience, did you have that thing of floating over your body and looking down on it? Or were you instantly transported somewhere else?
I was instantly detached from my body. I had absolutely no recollection of this person named Bree, this realm called Earth. And I was just instantaneously this expansive being in darkness, in blackness. And there I met the creator. I met the source. I met God, whatever you want to call him or it. You know, genderless. It was the absolute beginning of everything. It was all energy, all possibilities, and it was just love, and it was home. And even though I wasn't aware of where I had just come from, somehow my consciousness knew that something had changed. So I just had the thought, am I dead? And in that moment, three monks appear out of the blackness, cross-legged, just floating, with this grin, as if to say, if you only knew. And I was like, okay, well, that's curious. That doesn't answer anything. And they disappear and go back into the darkness. And then I end up in this amazing, bright, white, blue tunnel. And I'm going through it at like supersonic speed. And around me is tons of ones and zeros. And I feel that I'm being downloaded with all this amazing information. I wasn't aware of what that information was, but that it would be made available to me when I needed it. And after that, I end up in this white area, and in this white space, there's a huge pile of black numbers in front of me. And this is the only time in my experience where I had a human-like body. And behind me, I felt the presence of an ascended master teacher. So I grab this group of numbers, this pile of numbers, and I throw them up in the air, and with childlike enthusiasm, I exclaim, no wonder you love creating, because I had the knowledge that this universe and this world were created in math. And I just thought that was the most exciting knowledge. And after that, I ended up in a place I would spend the majority of my experience, and that was full of other beings. And I say beings because I have no idea if they were ever human, if they had come from other planets, other dimensions. They were other beings. And in this place, my thoughts turned into reality instantaneously. For example, I saw a couple beings sliding down these snow-covered trees, and I thought, oh, that looks like so much fun. I think I like snow. Instantly, I'm sliding down these trees, but instead of snow, it is moss-covered branches, and I look over to another being sliding down a tree next to me and have the realization, what if they like snow, and they're experiencing snow-covered trees while I'm experiencing this green-covered tree? But we're experiencing this together simultaneously, but they're different experiences based on what we like. It was just curious and very cool. I moved on from that to watching some beings working on this machine or this craft with a huge flame coming out of the tip of it. And one being's on a ladder, you know, kind of tinkering away at it. Another one's kind of like watching him and down at the base of the ladder. And then I saw some other beings in this grocery store, and, you know, they're kind of stocking shelves. And this realm was reminiscent of Earth, kind of, you know, there were stores, there were poles, there were ground and trees and sky and all that. And then I end up dancing with these other beings, but not a single word was spoken. And yet we moved in unison as if we had practiced this dance for millennia. It was absolutely incredible. Another point in this experience, the irony, is I ended up in the body of a snowman. And it's ironic because I just said I don't think I like snow, and yet here I am as a snowman. But I have the thought, I see the beings working on that machine with a huge flame, and I wonder, will I melt if I get too close? Well, and then instantly I'm under the flame, I'm melted, and I'm a puddle of eyeballs. I have the thought, if anyone will put me back together. Instantaneously, there were a few beings that put me back together and moved me away from the flame. Every single thought I had happened instantaneous, even faster than what we would consider telepathy. Telepathy, you kind of assume you have a thought, somebody else hears it, they have a thought, then you receive it and you hear it. But it was so much faster, and there was no kind of back and forth. It was just my thought instantly created the reality. There was also a time I tried to learn to fly in this space, and I was terrible at it. I ended up severing my arm, but there was no pain. There was no fear. There was just curiosity. And I was like, huh, I wonder what's going to happen. And I saw it grow back with binary code. I just thought that was the coolest thing. I ended up in this interesting room within this realm or wherever I was. And one side was brick, and there was a little opening that just kind of went dark into the abyss. And then the other side was like this half of an octagonal glass outside wall. It kind of looked like some greenhouses nowadays when you have a greenhouse incorporated in your home, but it wasn't a greenhouse. It was just this old man with a beard and a cane sitting in the corner. And we spoke for what felt like forever. That is still one part of my NDE that I cannot recall what the conversation was, but I believe that if it is needed, when it is needed, that conversation will make itself known. After I spent a lot of time with this gentleman that was like super old, he was the only one that had a resemblance of a human figure as well. And I had started moving with these other beams to this barbed wire fence on the edge of town, or what I would consider town based on, you know, our earth descriptions. And behind the barbed wire fence, I couldn't see what was beyond. It was really blurry, really fuzzy, and there was a small opening. And some of these beams started to go through the opening on a land bridge into, you know, what ended up being really blurry. And I just had the feeling that it was a higher dimension, or, you know, the next step. I was never asked if I wanted to go, if I wanted to stay. I wasn't shown a life review. I met no family members, no ancestors or anything, but I just knew that I couldn't go with them. The last part of my near-death experience, I was in this dark room with seven magnificent beings behind me. And when I say magnificent, it is nowhere near as the amazing love creation that I met in the blackness in the first part of my near-death experience, but it was more significant. They were more powerful than the master ascended teacher I met in the white part of my experience. And in front of me was this scroll, and it was unrolled, and there was starting to be script written on it. And the script was just glowing, glittering gold. And it had some amazing information. And that is when I realized that I was a human and that I'd come from Earth, and it was way too significant for a human to show. So my human ego came back and I laughed and they said, "Ha, you're showing this to a human." And just like that, the script went away, the scroll was rolled up, and was snapped back into my body instantaneously.
I've got a million questions for you there. What I wanted to ask was, first of all, you had that kind of tunnel with the ones and zeros. Why do you think that for you, you saw this kind of binary code? Why would that show up?
I am still trying to digest that. It's been almost 8 years. And, you know, why the binary code and why the numbers? Other than, you know, you look around here on Earth and you can see that everything is math. Everything is, you know, got some kind of beautiful geometry, you know, codes and all sorts of stuff. So you boil those down. And what I've come to realize is binary code is, you know, one of the simplest ways to code things, code life, code objects, you know, just a way to make matter happen. So I think that is the significance of it. Later, a few years, the code from my tunnel would also show up again, which is something I'm really excited to get to, but I don't want to skip ahead to that just yet.
So you say that you remembered nothing of your human self, but did you have a sense of having like many years of existence and knowledge, and you were quite a mature spirit at that point?
I didn't really have a sense of time or maturity or anything. I definitely didn't feel like I was just, you know, poofed or born into these realms or anything. Even though I mostly was unaware of this human experience, I felt like a kid in the playground of knowledge.
Hello, Simon here. I conduct past life regression therapy sessions over Zoom, and these sessions can be very insightful and healing. If you go to my website, pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, you can book a free 20-minute consultation where we can discuss what it is you would like to achieve. You'll find the link to my website in the show notes. So how long did the experience seem to last, but then compared to your physical state where you were having near-death experience?
Yeah, so when I returned to my body, I felt my heart start again, which was even weirder than feeling it stop. And I thought, I still don't know what had happened, but I thought I had been out of my body or, you know, something for months. I was positive if I opened my eyes that I would be in a coffin 6 feet underground, that my family had disregarded my wishes to be cremated because, you know, they were probably just, you know, displaced and, you know, upset at my passing. And so I had thought it had been months, or maybe wake up in a morgue. I had the thought, oh my gosh, this is how people get buried alive. And it took me a long time to actually open my eyes. I actually did not want to be back. I tried calling out to go back. I tried deep breathing. I tried some meditation. I tried hypnosis, and nothing worked. And eventually I had to open my eyes and I looked at my phone and saw it was 2:08. So then my first thought, it's 2:08 in the morning, weeks from when I remember, then maybe a few days. But why wasn't my family there yet? Then I checked the date and it was still the same date. And it had actually only been 8 minutes on this physical earth realm, where I had felt I had been gone for months.
You say you told your story in linear time, but actually while you were experiencing it, you had the impression that everything was happening at the same time?
Yeah, that's correct. So, you know, it's hard to describe these experiences in a non-linear fashion because our brains are hardwired to, you know, discuss things in linear fashion. That's what part of being human is about. We have time just to, you know, help make sense of the chaos. And so it did feel it absolutely felt timeless, but they did happen kind of in a sequential order. You know, rather than all at once, it was kind of sequential, so, but not necessarily linear. And I know that's a hard thing to understand because it's a hard thing to find words for.
You had to, at some point during experience, you did have a body, you said, but was it the body you have now, like Brianna, or was it just a generic human body? What was it?
So I never saw when I had a human-like body, I never actually saw it. So I couldn't tell you if it was generic or if it looked like my earthly body. So I never saw what my body looked like, other than, you know, my hands.
And with the Russian nesting doll, did you get a view of yourself there, or you just got the impression?
I got the impression because that's what all the other beings look like.
What did you make of that whole experience there where you were working together in a convenience store?
So at the time, it was just curious. It was just curiosity. It was just very cool. I was full of joy and, like I said, childlike enthusiasm and childlike wonder. After my experience, I realized it's because we are all connected to everything that I experienced in the first part of my experience. And so, you know, that's why we are all able to communicate without talking, without, you know, telepathy or anything. And we all kind of shared this you know, I think it was just the body of that dimension I was in. That was just kind of the standard body. Like when we choose to come here as a human, you know, we get to pick our avatars, you know, our attributes. We get to choose to be human. You know, I've heard some people have experienced lives, previous lives as aliens, you know, what we would consider aliens or extraterrestrials. So I think it was just the body of the realm of the dimension.
Okay. I talked to somebody, this guy had a near-death experience, and in part of it, what seemed to last for weeks, where he was doing IT support in an office, like 24 hours a day, which just doesn't seem like a nice NDE.
Sounds like hell.
Yeah. This golden scripted scroll that you were given, was it like huge? And do you feel that they showed it to you for a reason, in some way of saying, look, you're human and this isn't for you or something?
Oh, that part, I'm so upset with my ego coming back. It was a huge scroll, probably the size of me with even, you know, more rolled up, but it unrolled just a little bit, was as big as I was. And the words were enormous. Gosh, probably, I've never actually tried to think about how big the scroll or the letters were, but you know, probably a good 8 inches big, and just being written in a language I didn't know. And it was so important and so magnificent, and I don't remember any of it. And I know I'm not supposed to, because my ego came and said, "Hi, you're showing this to a human." And apparently it wasn't supposed to get back to humanity, which just frustrates the bejesus out of me. Yeah. I hope one day that I'll recover that first line of script I was able to see before it disappeared. But I can only see the first letter and a half at this point.
So you did this kind of spirit releasement therapy to help with your illness, your neurological thing. Did it help with that?
Well, that is where things get very interesting. And I had a long time struggle, because when I came back, I no longer had the oppression of these entities. So I had been cleared of these entities. And I also was in a whole new state of survival, because I felt like I'd been stuffed into a sausage casing. Walls were so scarily solid, and, you know, floors and desks, and just everything was so dense and solid. The world felt dense. I came back with medical intuition. I could feel people's pain. I could read people's thoughts. And it was overwhelming. It was so overwhelming that I didn't realize that my condition had also disappeared. It was daily. It was all day, every day. So that's how much I was in survival, because I didn't even realize I wasn't having these symptoms anymore after 15 years. And I was struggling so bad. I went into a major depression within the 6 months of returning. And my mom really tried to help me out. She connected me with the group IONS. And I actually attended a IONS conference in 2018. But all the near-death stories that I heard were just magnificent and beautiful. They'd gone to heaven. They had life reviews. They saw their ancestors. They had these healing castles of marble, you know, just like these beautiful gates, you know, just really very different than anything I experienced. And no one talked about this blackness I was in. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know what actually happened. So then I had realized around 18 months later that I no longer had symptoms of this condition. And I was like, okay, well, I know of other NDEers who were healed of chronic and terminal illnesses, like Anita Morajani, who was cured of stage 4 cancer through her near-death experience, and some other miraculous healings. Dr. Mary O'Neill, who survived, you know, I think 30 minutes underwater and a crazy, you know, evacuation through the jungle to save her life. You know, just these magnificent things of healing from near-death experiences. So I decided, okay, you know, maybe this is real. And you know, I was healed of my condition. And my mom connected me with Jeff Mara, and he was excited to have me on his show back when he was very, very unknown. He was a very small group, so I felt like it was safe. Because at the time, I returned to my career. I returned back to my home that I'd left. And I just tried to resume the life with vigor. Like, I now was healed. I could do anything. I could do everything better. And I could be better. So I go on a show and explain that my condition had been cured from my NDE experience. Well, not too long after that, my symptoms start showing up. And so I went into, oh my gosh, just anxiety and kind of depression again. And I was like, okay, so I probably didn't have an NDE. And now I'm, you know, on the internet saying this NDE cured my condition. I didn't even know if I had an NDE at that point. I wasn't sure. And I'm like, well, now I'm a phony and I'm a fraud if anyone ever sees it, you know. And I was a career woman, and it was just, it was really heartbreaking. And that kind of plays into what would happen down the road. My condition definitely came back with a vengeance, and it got even worse. And I was finally approved for experimental brain surgery when I was 29, I believe, is when I was approved for the surgery. And it was actually really successful. They weren't too hopeful. They thought, you know, maybe it would take care of 70% of my symptoms, of the muscle rigidity and maybe the tremors, but they didn't really have any hope for the twitching or non-epileptic episodes. However, I came out with like 85, 90% improvement, but it was brain surgery. It was a deep brain stimulator, and it took some time to heal. And during my healing process, I got the most amazing job offer. I'm like, oh my gosh, now I really can do it. Now I can, you know, be on the top of the ladder, you know, living my dream career and being taken seriously, being counted on. And I was so excited, but it was just months after brain surgery and I was nowhere ready for it. So I actually turned it down. But when I turned down this offer, I knew no offer would ever come like it again. And I decided to leave the field completely. And my family invited me to come and recover from brain surgery, their home, you know, like, give it a year, figure out what you want to do. And I started doing anything and everything that touched my heart. I tried house sitting, dog sitting, private chefing, because I love to cook. I tried working for small companies, and I learned about this thing called a certified death doula. I became a death doula, and all of this stuff, and realized that, okay, now that my symptoms are taken care of and I feel better, it's time to rewrite some of the subconscious programs I wrote out of survival growing up. You know, we all have subconscious programs, and by the time we're 35, we run on about 95% of them. So I was still in the time that it was a great time to rewrite subconscious programs I no longer wanted. And I attended a meditation retreat, and I didn't know much about meditation other than mindfulness, where you're just very aware of your 3D. You go full into your senses. You go full into touch, smell, sight, taste, hearing, all of that. You get very mindful of your presence here on earth. But this type of meditation takes you completely out of your body, takes you completely away from your senses. And it really attracted me because the person who developed this type of, well, his specific type of meditation, I'm sure there are other tons of other meditations similar to it, but the way he spoke about going into nowhere where there's nothing, no body, no time, and no place, like, oh my gosh, that's the darkness I was in, because he calls it the blackness. I was like, that's where I went in my near-death experience. So it totally intrigued me. And the first time I left my body in this meditation, I ended up back in a similar place of my NDE, where it was just blackness, but it was all the energy, all the possibilities, and everything. And in that, I saw my heart and my brain kind of appear out of the darkness like the monks did. And part of that code from my tunnel, the binary code, started coming straight from source, straight from the creator, straight from God, through my heart and up through my brain. And it just circulated and circulated and circulated. And in that moment, I was actually healed permanently from my neurological movement disorder. I came out of it just knowing and still a little nervous. It took me probably a good 18 hours to shut off my deep brain stimulator. Even though I could turn it back on, I was still pretty nervous, but I shut it off. And usually I could tell instantaneously if even a minor adjustment had been made, and let alone shutting it off within seconds, I would start twitching and trembling again. And so I shut it off and I waited, and nothing happened. Nothing happened for seconds, and then minutes, and then hours, and then days, and then weeks, and then months, and finally years. And it was absolutely incredible. So that code, that binary code, showed up to heal me completely.
Oh, that's amazing. I wanted to ask you about your family's reaction to this near-death experience, because I think you mentioned that somewhere your mum was aware of near-death experiences because her grandmother had had one.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was very unaware of NDEs or, you know, too much of the mystical or the spiritual or, you know, any of that. I didn't have the energy to, or the care to research or read or listen to anything. And, you know, YouTube was in its infancy when I was a teenager. So, you know, there just wasn't that much material. And, you know, there were some books, but I didn't like to read. I didn't have the energy or the time or the, you know, willingness. But my great grandmother had three near-death experiences, even though that she didn't label it that. The term wouldn't be coined till later with Dr. Raymond Moody. But she had just mentioned just briefly, because she didn't want to talk about it and be ostracized from the community, but it had been passed down. You know, she had come back with a couple messages like, watch your words, and we're not meant to know everything. And she had a very, very, very religious Catholic husband that would go very hard into these very strict churches. One wouldn't let you play cards, so they had to stop playing cards. One wouldn't let you wear jewelry. So she said, once I take off my wedding ring, it's not going back on. Then they switched churches where jewelry was okay. And he's like, put on your wedding ring again. And she's like, nope, you know, I'm not doing it. So she was already, you know, there's way more to this life than religion. And that got passed on to my grandma, who, you know, was also raised in the Catholic Church, absolutely terrified. They had, you know, these revivals where, oh, you're a sinner, you're going to hell. And she was terrified of going to hell until around the age of 40, where she's like, you know what? This can't be right. So she started reading more about spirituality and metaphysics and, you know, just opening her mind, which thankfully got passed on to my mom. My grandmother passed on some of this information and this curiosity to my mom, who, unbeknownst to me, had been reading about near-death experiences and, you know, alien encounters and this paranormal stuff. And then, of course, my sister and I encountering paranormal stuff in our house. She's a researcher. She dug deep into paranormal and all of these things. So because of that, when I told her what happened, she had already listened to tons of NDEs. And she's like, oh, Brianna, I think you had an NDE. I was like, I don't know about that. And it took me 5 years after to actually come to the realization that I did indeed have a near-death experience. And it was after listening to Evan Alexander's story. There was just so many similarities and parts that I'd never heard anyone else talk about, like especially the blackness. I think he calls it the void. And so she was absolutely monumental to me accepting and understanding pretty soon off the bat. And, you know, connecting with other people who had these experiences and, you know, just very supportive. My sister also had paranormal, metaphysical, and spiritual experiences since she was a child. So she understood as well. It was a little foreign to the rest of my family and my friends. So I really just didn't talk much about it until I left my career and decided, okay, I'm going to tell my story and see what happens.
And you had these experiences when you were younger, which might suggest you had some kind of psychic talent or mediumship. After the NDE, was it those things have been supercharged for you?
Oh, absolutely. So I saw auras as a kid. I did have some, you know, kind of some other interesting abilities that I kind of just shut down, especially when they scared me because I didn't know what they were. And when I came back from my NDE, it was like I had no control and I could hear the world. I could feel the world. And it was, that's why I went into depression, because it was in survival. It was so overwhelming because everything was absolutely heightened and supercharged.
So you've got three books. Could you tell us about them and where people can get them?
Absolutely. So the way I started this journey was after I said goodbye to my career, I was freaking out, like, oh my gosh, I just made the worst decision of my life. I worked so hard to get here. What did I do? What is the meaning of all this? And I couldn't sleep. I ended up meditating and doing some hypnosis and getting to a realm of answers. It wasn't quite, you know, the darkness of my NDE, but it was a realm. I still felt very attached to my body and yet very in this realm. And I just started asking all the answers. I started exploring different paths. And, you know, when I went down a path and it got dark, be like, okay, well, that means it's not the right path. So I turn around and go the other path. And I finally came across this one that was just beautiful. And there was this big giant sheet. And when I decided to continue on it, this beautiful lady ripped down the sheet and showed me mountains. And that was around the time my family invited me to come, you know, stay with them to recover. And I realized that mountains were a symbol because they lived in the mountains. Like, okay, but what the heck am I going to do there? And I came across this stream and there was books being thrown in. And as the stepping stones to cross the stream and cross the river of change. And I was like, I didn't even like reading. Now I've got to write books. So I came out of that and wrote my first book, White Flame, which is really the paranormal metaphysical journey that led to my near-death experience. There's a little bit of mention about my illness, but I didn't know at the time how they were connected. So it mostly focuses on the paranormal, metaphysical, and my NDE. My second book is Wired to Be Dysfunctional, and that was co-authored with my mom. And that is heavily about the chronic illness, the neurological movement disorder called myoclonus dystonia, and our, you know, experience with it. So hers as a mother, as a caregiver, as an advocate, and mine as a child going through this unknown chronic illness. And it ended about, we ended the book a year after my surgery because we thought, oh, you know, we finally have the answer. The story is complete. But then I do this meditation retreat, become a death doula, and actually understand way more about my own near-death experience and this reality. And that led me to write my third book, Leads to Nowhere. And I had also realized just how combined and important both my illness and my paranormal metaphysical experiences had to do with my near-death experience, recovering from it, and how to heal and change our reality around us.
So it's called Leads to Nowhere. What does that mean?
Yes. So it's definitely a play on words. So I've got a deep brain stimulator and I've got leads that go from the battery computer in my chest, up my neck and into the skull. And there's electrodes that are placed into the deep part of my brain. And after I came out of the meditation retreat healed, somebody had asked me, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to remove it? And I said, no, I don't want another brain surgery just to remove it because that, you know, can, you know, take more healing and introduce risk of infection. But I thought, oh, maybe I'll remove the battery someday. And then they're like, well, where will the leads go? Will they just go like into nowhere? But there's a second meaning, because that's the space of healing, where there is, you know, it's a sense of nowhere, nothing, no place, no time, no being, but it's absolutely everything. It's every time, every place, everything, every being. So I kind of put those together as, you know, my whole journey.
That's fantastic. And people can get those books on your website. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, I named my business with some binary code. I felt bionic after my brain surgery. And so between my brain surgery and the binary code, it is Brionic LLC, and that's BRIONICLLC.com. Just because I had to throw in some binary.
Great. And I'll put a link to your website in the show notes. Thanks for coming on the podcast. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me and letting me share my story.
This week, I was talking to Brianna Lafferty about her near-death experience. And a great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon. You can now sign up for a 7-day free trial. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.